Sports Time Radio. All sports, all the time.
Minute there, I didn't think the music was going to play, and that would have been a terrible way to start the Friday podcast, wouldn't it? Oh, hey, I did get Friday.
Start spreading the news.
Well, there you go. That means Schomburg Stu is here. Stu, how you doing?
It's definitely Friday when you hear the man singing.
There you go. You'd like to call into the podcast, talk to Stu or I, 646-478-3753 is the number to do that. If not, feel free to email us, sportstimeradio@hotmail.com. Anything else you need, head on over to sportstimeradio.com. Now, the blogs go up over there on Wednesdays and Saturdays, so something will pop up there sometime tomorrow. Of course, while you're at sportstimeradio.com, go ahead and hit that link, follow it over to the Sports Time Radio Facebook page. If you could like that while you're over there, well, hey, we'd greatly appreciate that. But don't forget we have the Twitter feed, which is at Sports Time Radio. Now, sadly, we don't have Stu on Twitter yet, but feel free to reach out to me at Burke Time, and I can pass any of the messages you have along to Stu. So there you go. We are off and running. So what's going on?
Well, we are looking forward to a lot of NCAA action over the weekend.
Oh, I thought you were going to bring up the fact that the Cubs are down to Colorado 10-0 in their spring training game. But, okay, we can talk about the NCAA. So.
Yeah, I didn't check the score. I'm surprised to hear that because the Cubs are doing so well in spring training.
I just saw it because it's on the top header here for the ESPN website, so I picked up the score.
Who
there.
Are the Cubs,
so,
who are the Cubs pitchers today? Do you know offhand?
No idea. I didn't even pay attention. So, you know, I don't watch it, so I don't know, and I didn't pull the box score up. I just saw it sitting at the top, but. Like you said, we do have some NCAA action tonight. We have four games, and they start off with the one I'm most interested in, which has St. Peter's, the 15th seed, still hanging around, taking on number 3 Purdue. They are the last Big Ten team left in the tournament. Then we have – that game's on CBS. We have number 4, the 4th-seeded Providence Friars, against the only number 1 seed left, the Kansas Jayhawks. That is a 6:30 start on TBS. Then we have number 8 North Carolina against number 4 UCLA. That's 8:39 is the start time on CBS. And then we wrap up with Iowa State and Miami. Now, this is interesting because Iowa State is an 11 seed and Miami's a 10. That's the 8:59 start on TBS. So we will get at least one higher seed advancing into, what are we on now, the Elite Eight. And it's possible we may get 2 if St. Peter's can pull it off again, but it's going to be easy, but you never know. I know we emailed back and forth about it a little bit, but St. Peter's got it in them one more time?
You know, I think they have a shot at beating Purdue. I'm not sure if Purdue is really the strongest representative in the Big Ten or not.
Yeah, well, they're the only one left, so they have to be, right?
And who does Duke wind up playing next?
Let me see if I can grab that really quick. Again, we were talking about my internet before the podcast started. Now I've got to find it. Where are they? What section are they in? Oh, here we go. I found them. Duke plays Arkansas next in a 2-4 matchup. So yeah, and Arkansas, of course, is the team that just beat Gonzaga last night. So they knocked out a number 1, and Duke beat number 3 Texas Tech.
That should be quite a game.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. Houston was the other team that knocked off a number one last night. They beat Arizona, and they'll face number two Villanova, who beat Michigan last night. So,
well, don't sell Houston short. They have a very good team.
Yeah, surprisingly, because a lot of people were picking them to get beat in the first round by UAB. So,
don't forget, they've only lost two games all year, I think, Houston.
Did beat Illinois. I never remember what anybody's record is when they come into these things. So, you know, it's hard enough for me to figure out who's playing and who's doing what, let alone trying to remember what one of 68 teams' record are when these things start.
No one has a perfect bracket anymore.
No, I believe after St. Peter's second win, that ended all the perfect brackets. So some people had them winning their first game against Kentucky. And then after they beat, I don't remember who they beat the second time, that was the end of it.
Yeah, well, I wonder if you don't know whether or not they still offer that huge $1 million jackpot if someone gets a perfect score or not anymore, or is that gone now?
You know, it wasn't $1 million this year. It was a much lower sum. I think it was $250,000. Not that that's anything to sneeze at. But it was, I want to say Warren Buffett was sponsoring the $1 million bracket thing. And I don't think he's involved anymore. So the price, and you know, every site has it. I mean, you can enter on every site and they're offering, you know, prize money for a perfect bracket. So if you could land one on every site, you'd probably cash more than $1 million. But yeah, there's no one single $1 million prize.
When you think about all the teams entered now, especially the last few years when they've increased the amount of teams playing, that it's virtually an impossibility to have a perfect bracket.
Yeah, the chance of landing a perfect bracket would be just so random. It would be ridiculous if somebody actually did it. And, you know, like I've said before on here, I'm willing to bet if somebody ever does, it's not going to be anybody who's a college basketball expert. You know, it's going to be some random person who just picked the team because they like the color of their jerseys or they like the nickname.
Yeah, that's about the size of it. But, this is turning out to be a pretty interesting tournament as tournaments go. Of course, you have the usual suspects in the finals. Of course, we have Kansas and Villanova and UCLA and the normal teams you expect to be there.
So, yeah, well, you know, oddly, there were teams, you know, like North Carolina is hanging around and so is UCLA. And, you know, North Carolina was an 8 seed. A lot of people didn't expect them to get here. You know, and UCLA is a 4, and they're still hanging around.
The funny thing about those teams, though, is that no matter how low they're projected, they seem to rise to the occasion when the NCAA starts.
Yeah, some do. You know, in other cases, you know, like a Gonzaga, they almost seem to go the other way. And, you know, you have to wonder, as good as they are, if they'll ever win an NCAA championship now.
I would think not. I mean, how many times have they been the number one seed? And how many times are they disappointed over the years?
Basically every
year is no exception.
Yeah, they've been a big-time favorite the last 3 or 4 seasons coming into the tournament. You know, last year they were the pick. At least they got to the final game last year before they got beat by Baylor. But this year, yeah, I mean, they were the number one team, you know, multiple times during the season. They were number one coming in, and you know, now it looks like they'll lose their two best players in Drew Timmy and Chet Holmgren. You know, they'll both go to the NBA. But they do always seem to find a way to recruit and replace. And now with the, you know, the transfer portal, it's so hard to keep up on who goes where and, you know, what it's, you know, it's worse than free agency in professional sports. So it's, you know, if somebody wants to go play there, they could pop right back up to, you know, number one again.
Yeah, a talented athlete will look at just the name recognition and know that if he goes to that school, he's got a good chance of maybe being recognized by the NBA a little bit better than some of the other schools.
Yeah, well, that, you know, Gonzaga is in such a weak conference. Oh, excuse me. You know, that there's always a relatively good chance they're going to win it, so you're going to get to showcase your talent in the NCAA as well when everybody is watching.
Exactly, yeah.
So.
But I fear that Gonzaga is going to be the perennial bridesmaid year after year.
Yeah, you know, it's starting to look like that more and more. You know, just for whatever reason, you know, and I know I heard a lot of people complaining last night about the, apparently there were a couple foul calls that didn't go their way. And it's like, oh, okay, great, we're going to complain about this. So.
Yeah, there were a couple of calls at the end that could have gone either way, but would that have affected the outcome?
You know. Yeah, I mean that's just how it is. I mean, come on, they called traveling on Alex Caruso last night in an NBA game. They don't ever call traveling.
I've seen it a couple times this year. I'm surprised.
Yeah, every once in a while one pops up, but not very often.
No. Well, they can call it every game at least several times if they wanted to.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's just one of those fun things. But, yeah, you know, it's just, again, they're, you know, that team, and for whatever reason, they just can't seem to get it done. Whatever, you know, when it comes tournament time, they just can't seem to go all the way through.
And yet, every year it seems that the odds makers seem to make them the prohibitive favorites.
Yeah, they're always definitely one of the favorites. You know, with good reason, obviously. They put up, really nice stats during the season, and they win their games. But, yeah, for whatever reason, I mean, who knows? So,
as you pointed out, though, they're not in the strongest conference, though. And maybe that hurts
yeah,
them.
You know, you do wonder come tournament time, but they have played a tougher regular season schedule lately. They had some tough games this year, and you know they got through that okay, but for whatever reason, you know, last night they were just outplayed. I mean, I saw highlights of the game, and they were just beat.
And it wasn't a blowout type of loss, but 4 or 5 points is decisive enough.
Yeah. So, you know, yeah, it's just one of those things, but you do wonder how it kind of keeps happening to them. So.
Yeah. Have you noticed that a lot of the competitive games seem to be decided by 5 or 6 points by and large?
Yeah, you know, we haven't had any real tight games. I mean, a couple here and there, but, you know, like Gonzaga ended up getting beat by, what was it, 6 points last night? So while it's close, it wasn't, you know, the one-pointer we're looking for or the last-second shot people are out for.
And The same thing with Texas Tech and Duke. I think Texas Tech got beat by, 5 points?
Yeah, I'm trying to catch up on the scores here, and I believe it was Arizona got beat by close to almost 10, I think, last night. But let me grab some scores here and see if it will give me what we had from yesterday. Let's So if I can figure out what day that was, because I've got a whole week worth of stuff here. So that's always always fun. Yeah, we had Houston ended up, they beat Arizona by 8. Villanova beat Michigan by 8, and then Duke won by 5. So, yeah, nothing
really like a nail-biter type last-second game.
Yeah, maybe until they had to start shooting free throws or something, but nothing that's going to pull you off the edge of your seat.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you something. The shot clock in the NCAA is 30 seconds. Is that correct?
I believe so.
Now, at one time, wasn't it higher than that, or am I wrong there?
Yeah, it used to be 45. They started at 45.
Yeah, that's what I thought, too.
Oh.
But I think 30 seems a little better pace game with a 30-second clock as compared to 45 seconds.
Yeah, it works out okay. It kind of keeps the game moving. So, it's not too bad.
Yeah, I think it's the proper way to go.
We'll see how it ends up. Who knows? They may change it one of these days to 24. Or they may, do something else with it. Who knows? So.
Well, don't forget also, unlike the NBA, their games are only 40 minutes as compared to 48 in the NBA, which accounts for the lower scores also.
Yeah, and you get the two halves instead of four quarters. So.
Right.
So, But, yeah, it's a much more enjoyable game to watch than the NBA game. I don't know why or what it is, but I can actually watch more of a college game. I still can't sit through a whole thing like the NBA, but I can watch more of it than I can with NBA. That's just horrible.
Yeah, the NBA is starting to really sour me a little bit. I think the end of the New Orleans game, the first quarter, I think, wound up 39-31, which is ridiculous. Whatever happened to defense? I guess there isn't any in the NBA.
They just, for whatever reason, they basically legislated it out of the game because they believe fans don't want to see it. They want high scoring and they want dunks and they want all that. They don't want anything to do with with defense.
No.
So yeah, it's just how they are,
Have you looked at the point spreads for tonight's game yet? Tonight's games?
I kind of forgot about that. I am interested to know how big of a favorite Purdue is, so I'll have to grab those here while we are where you brought it up, and we'll see who's doing what here. So,
you think they'll be more than a 6-point favorite?
Oh, they might be. It would be it wouldn't surprise me if they were. The tough part is when you search it, you get every ad under the sun that wants you to sign up for their website to bet money. So
naturally.
Oh, actually, Purdue is a really big favorite, anywhere from 12.5 to 13 points.
Do you think that's too much?
The way St. Peter's is playing, you would think. So
that seems like an awful lot, because St. Peter's, they may be outgunned physically, but they seem like a fundamentally well-coached team.
So, yeah, and then you can get Kansas is anywhere from a 6.5 to an 8.5 point favorite. You know, no surprise, the North Carolina-UCLA game is the closest one. It's 1.5 to 2.5 with UCLA being the favorite. And then Miami is the favorite anywhere from 1.5 to 3.5. So they have the biggest gap, but not a lot of points involved there. But, yeah, you would think with the way St. Peter's is playing, there's a lot of people going to want to take those points. You know, if you could get 12.5 or 13 points, that's a big number.
That is a huge number. And, you know, Purdue is a good team, but I don't know if they justify getting that many points.
And especially with the way these games have played out. I mean, like, we didn't have a blowout last night, and I get it. It's a 15 against a 3. But I think you got to take into consideration the way St. Peter's has played. And to be fair, it is National Peacock Day, and they are the Peacocks. So that has to be some kismet there, right?
Exactly. And, surprised that they won't be on the Peacock Network on streaming.
Yeah. Well, you know, they got to pay for those rights before they can do that. So, but of course, you might probably just beat St. Peter's by saying I would take them in the points, because generally I'm the kiss of death for these teams.
Yeah, that's the one game that interests me more than any of the other ones so far. But the North Carolina-UCLA game are two longtime teams that seem to be associated with going deep into the NCAA, and that'll be an interesting game also.
So, yeah, and you have to think now that Duke has become the sentimental favorite, right, with this being
exactly
Krzyzewski's year and everything. Everybody is kind of rooting for them now.
Exactly. I thought the same thing. And they had a tough time when they played Texas Tech, and it was a back-and-forth game. They were down for quite a bit of the game, but their players are really rallying around the coach because they know he's going out after this season, and they want him to go out a winner, which could happen.
So, yeah, you know, it's possible. I mean, you know, they're right there now. I mean, they'll get into the Elite Eight and see if they can move into the Final Four. So it's definitely, they're still here, and that's all you need to be. You know, you need to be in the tournament to win it, and they're still in it. So.
Well, they'll have a tough time with the next game, but I think they'll have a good chance to win it, but it's going to be a very close game, a competitive game again.
Yeah, hopefully. You know, and on the plus side tonight, you won't be bothered by, any Bulls or Blackhawks games tonight, because they're both off. They're playing tomorrow. I saw the Blackhawks have another afternoon matinee on ABC, so they must have liked the ratings that they're back on. This time it's against Vegas.
And did you realize that for the first time all season, the Blackhawks won back-to-back games?
Yeah, so I heard somebody talking about that this morning on the radio. So a little surprising considering they were on the road and they were out west that they won two games. That doesn't happen with a lot of Chicago teams.
No. The second game, of course, was a shootout, but the other game was quite a surprise when they beat Anaheim as it happened to them quite a bit this year. They had a one-goal lead late in the game, and Anaheim tied the game, but then the Blackhawks managed to get the lead and then the empty net goal. So that was a surprising win for them for sure.
Yeah, well, you know, even last night is a surprise. The Kings are a lot better than I thought they were. They're actually in second place in the Pacific Division in a playoff team. While, you know, Anaheim is below 500 and not, you know, like the Blackhawks won't be in the playoffs. But the Kings have had a really good year. You know, they have 79 points, so they're right there. But, yeah, that's a kind of a shock that the Blackhawks could go in there and beat them at home.
And they didn't have Lankinen in the nets. I believe D'Elia was the goaltender for them in the game.
Yeah, because, you know, very, very rarely does a goalie play back-to-back games now. You know, I know every once in a while they will, but so.
Well,
and there are five games. You know, there are five games tonight. You know, Dan's going to have to find a way to watch the Capitals as they play the Sabres. We got the Penguins at the Rangers, the Blue Jackets at the Jets, the Flyers at the Avalanche, and the Coyotes at the Flames. So
I was looking at the standings earlier today, the NHL, and it looks to me, I would assume that the Blackhawks have been already eliminated from playoff contention based upon their record right now.
Yeah, you know, I don't know if they're, like, officially eliminated because they have 15 or 16 games left, and if they were to manage to win every one, you know, and get 2 points for every game, they would probably get in, even though that, you know, that would be next to impossible. I mean, that would just be a huge winning streak if they could do that. So I think mathematically they're still alive. But, yeah, sitting at 57 points, I don't think they're going to do that and get in. So,
yeah, they've been one of the disappointments this year for sure, because I believe you pointed out that some of the so-called experts thought they would be a contender this year, and it's been just the opposite.
Yeah, there were a lot of people who not only had them going into playoffs, but really thought they could be Stanley Cup contenders and have a chance to win it. And, yeah, it just, for a myriad of reasons, obviously, just didn't work out.
No, not at all.
So.
Well, things look rather bleak in the Chicago pro sports at the moment. I mean, there's only one good team out of all the teams in all the major sports right now that has a chance to really do something. That would be the White Sox.
Yeah. So yeah, they're about it. That's about all that's left standing. So
yeah, I think
we'll see how
I think they're projected to win about 92 and 93 games this year.
Yeah, I know I saw this was before some of the signings happened or some of the trades got made. They were the odds-on favorite to win the American League and go to the World Series.
I think that's a stretch myself.
Yeah,
they don't seem to do well in the first round. They usually wind up playing Houston, and they get quickly eliminated.
So you know it takes a little time to learn when you're that young going through the playoffs. So we'll see how they do, and it looks like they're going to be a really good team. Of course, you know, barring injury, you know, you can't predict those kind of things.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Last year, don't forget, they were hampered by serious injuries to Jimenez and other players that they had. Their center fielder was hurt for a long time, and I'm sure that didn't help them any. But now, so far, they played the spring training injury-free at the moment.
Yeah, well, maybe the shorter spring training will help them, and, they can keep Jimenez and Robert healthy going into the year. So,
but of course you won't be watching any of the games this year anyway.
Yeah, no, I won't get to see any of them. So I'm sure I'll catch highlights or hear that kind of stuff. But yeah, no, sadly no baseball for me because of their own stupidity. And in a way I think I got lucky because I saw they put that incredibly stupid runner on second rule back in yesterday. So I won't have to deal with that in extra inning games.
Yeah, I was surprised to see that rule put in place again, which is going to really
it's another situation of them just not knowing what the fans want. And that doesn't surprise me with baseball.
And was this agreed upon by, I mean, do the players have a say in that decision?
Yeah. Their union ratified it with the owners. So
I guess we could say that we're not going to see any more 16 or 17 inning baseball games anymore.
No, oh God, no. Yeah, they put in that rule, and then, you know, they put in the what is now the Ohtani rule.
Yeah.
So they can keep him in games when he pitches. So, and that was the only reason that was done. There was no other reason for it. So.
Yeah, that's why they call it the Ohtani rule.
Yeah. Well, you know, they don't call it that. That's just what everybody else is calling it. So. And I thought they did one more thing. I'm trying to remember what it was. So
when you think about it, though, baseball at one time, maybe not anymore, but was the only sport in which you can't substitute a player, take them out of the game and put them back in again, unlike basketball,
yeah,
hockey, or football.
So, yeah, well, you know, and I think it's still like that. You know, I mean, the only thing they did with changing this rule was allowing him to stay in the game as the designated hitter. So.
Yeah,
here they are. Yeah, they expanded the rosters from 26 to 28 for April. Then the stupid runner on second. Then the pitcher can remain in the batting order after they are replaced on the mound. And then doubleheaders will be 9 innings. So at least they didn't bring that stupid 7-inning rule back.
Oh, that's a good thing, at least.
So yeah, but yeah,
of
so
course.
they got half the rules. They got half the rules right. Well, yeah. I'll give them half the rules. Two of the four aren't bad. So.
I assume that when the playoffs start, the runner on second rule will no longer.
Yeah,
happen, only right?
That's only for the regular season.
What about the Ohtani rule?
You know, no, that apparently stays. But, you know, that runner on second rule is just for the media because they complain about how long the games are and that they don't like being at the ballpark when that, even though it's their job to cover games and report on games, they don't apparently like to do it. So.
Well, I venture to say that a normal 9-inning game is still going to take over 3 hours again.
Right, unless it's the Yankees-Red Sox, then it's 5.
Yeah, that's 5, exactly.
Well, you know, that's just a given.
Yeah, it's too bad you won't be watching the games because they'll be starting a week from Thursday.
Yeah, no, I don't think it's too bad at all, but it's, you know, it's just disappointing. So.
Well, if you really want to truly keep your vow, you shouldn't even watch the highlights on the news or MLB.
Yeah, well, sadly, I have to because I have fantasy baseball I have to keep up with, so I have to know who's doing what and who's hurt.
That's
and all
true.
That stuff.
That's true. That's
so,
true.
Yeah, I can't just let my teams go to crap because Major League Baseball and the Players Union were stupid.
Have all your leagues been set and everything set up now? Everything ready to go?
No, we start our first draft tomorrow. We're doing the Money League draft that Mr. Fantasy and I do, and they're doing the slow version of it, so it's going to take – well, basically, we'll be lucky if we're done by the time the season starts. And then our other drafts are set for, like, April 1st, all right around that area.
Oh, very appropriate to have it on April Fool's Day.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It definitely fits there. So, yeah, we'll see how it goes.
Yeah. By the way, the first thing I thought of when you mentioned the Cubs was down 10-0 was that they had re-signed Jake Arrieta, and he was pitching for them today. But I guess that probably didn't happen.
No, I actually looked, and Alec Mills was the starter today. So.
Yeah, that when I see his name in the box office, that's it. He's
got a no hitter.
Yeah, he had a no hitter a couple years ago. That's right, and I'm afraid the league has caught up with him.
You know, that's just how it goes. He's I don't know what he is, but yeah, he's one of the few pitchers who's thrown a no hitter.
Yeah. Yeah, well, don't forget that. I don't know if you noticed, but Kyle Hendricks has not been throwing all that great in spring training so far either.
Yeah, no, I didn't pay much attention to what they have going on. So,
but of course, as we pointed out over the years, and spring training is meaningless.
Yeah. So,
I told you the story probably many times. I was a kid, 9, 10 years old, starting to pay attention to baseball, and the Cubs would do so great in spring training, and I was really excited for the season. But then the regular season started, and I noticed that there is a huge difference between a one-loss record in spring training and when the regular season starts.
Oh, yeah. So that's just kind of how it goes. So.
Yeah, I learned that the hard way.
Yeah, I remember getting all excited, too, and, you know, my father telling me not to, no, it's just spring training. Don't get carried away. But I always got carried away.
Yeah, as did I.
But, yeah, you know, it's like, oh, okay, here we go. So, but we'll see. You know, maybe it'll be different than we think, and they'll actually win some games. But I still think they're a third-place team, only because that division is so bad.
That's the only reason that they're going to wind up in third place.
So, I can't see them managing to beat the Brewers or the Cardinals.
My prediction is 75 wins approximately for next season, upcoming season.
Yeah, the Cardinals are apparently the favorite to win the division. I thought maybe it would be the Brewers, but it looks like it's the Cardinals.
But I think it'll be a toss-up between those two teams.
Yeah, I didn't go into much detail, so I was a little surprised that they were, the prohibited favorite. I figured it would be closer to like 50-50. So.
Well, I think that this is the year that Yelich is finally going to bounce back and play up to his capabilities. So the Brewers are going to be a dangerous club again.
Well, they would be happy about that if he managed to do that. He's really scuffled the season and then last year.
I know there was a lot of injuries involved, but I've been very surprised at how his lack of productivity over the last couple of years.
Yeah, I really thought he would bounce back last year. I was just like, okay, he'll get back to being – or close to being Christian Yelich, and no, he never got anywhere close to being that guy. And, maybe it was one of those things where, he was still kind of dealing with the injury and they just didn't say anything.
It's very possible. I was thinking that maybe it's a couple of a series of nagging little injuries that in itself just made things a little bit more difficult for him.
Yeah. So, it could be the same kind of thing that Chris Bryant went through, where it just never seemed like he got back to being Chris Bryant after he got hurt.
No, I think that he never is going to be the ball player I thought he was going to be. And I think that when he was hurt, for some reason he's never been the same since. Although he's got a big advantage now, signing that 7-year deal with Colorado. He's playing there for his home game, so that's got to help him out tremendously in his batting average and his home runs and RBIs.
He should hit 60 homers in Colorado, right, in 80 games? That's not too much to ask, is it?
No, I would think maybe he should be able to certainly hit 35 to 45 home runs overall for the season. Driving 100 runs at least for them.
I had him penciled in for a lot more than that. So
you would think with playing there that, and I'm wondering if that was one of the reasons he made a decision to sign there.
Yeah, actually, what I read was they were the only team willing to give him a long-term deal. And that's what he was looking for. Everybody else wanted to go, 2, 3, 4 years, and he was looking for long term. And they were the team that offered it.
Yeah. Well, $26 million a year for 7 years isn't a bad deal. I know you and I would have trouble living on that kind of money, but I guess he can do it.
You know, yeah, you know, I would have to make some cuts, you know, on what I do, but you know, it would be okay. I would get by. So
I had to think about if I can afford an extra box of ample turnovers with that kind of money or not.
So yeah, you know, hey, we'll have to, you know, you gotta make those sacrifices.
Exactly. It will be very interesting though to see how he does this year.
Yeah, you know, it's, you know, especially playing in Colorado, how will that work out? But, you know, we'll see. It'll be interesting. It'll be interesting how, you know, all those guys do. You know, Schwarber going to Philadelphia will be kind of fun. You know, that looks like a good team with a really good offensive lineup, so they may be in a position to do something. You know, and he'll have Harper and Castellano around him.
Yeah,
so,
will they give a lot of competition to Atlanta? Well, Atlanta might be the favorite, but Philadelphia might give them a good battle this year.
Well, you know, don't forget the Mets added Max Scherzer. You know, they got Francisco coming up, and you know, they made those trades with the A's to pick up the guys. So, that's going to turn into a tough division. Oddly, somebody saw a prediction that they said the Marlins could be a surprise team there, but I don't see that at all. I don't even think they'll be 500. But,
think about, and I might make a prediction is saying that they might finish ahead of Washington.
Yeah, that's where
I have. It's a possibility. Yeah, I think Washington might wind up being the cellar this year.
You know, and the sad part is Washington may have the best player in baseball right now in Juan Soto, and they're just a bad team.
Yeah, it's too bad that a player with his talent has to play with a subpar team.
Yeah. You know, but unfortunately it happens. You know, I mean, Ernie Banks spent his whole career as a Cub.
Yeah. And how many playoff games did he participate in?
None, wasn't it? Did they ever make it with him?
Never. Not one game.
You know, of course, it was different then. You had to win the division to get into the playoffs now. They weren't just handing out, you know, playoff spots right like they do now. I mean, there's 12 playoff teams now.
Yeah, the closest he came was 1969 when they had a huge lead for the entire season before that monumental collapse in mid-August.
Yeah, you know, and then, you know, like, you know, going back to Philadelphia, I think their biggest issue, and it always seems to be for whatever reason, is going to be that bullpen. You know, did they shore it up enough? You know, I know they brought in Corey Knebel to close, but he hasn't closed in a few years. They added Jeruz Familia and Brad Hand, so they added some veteran guys. You know, it's been such an issue for the last two or three years, and got to wonder if maybe they figured it out finally, but I'm not exactly sold at Knebel as a closer.
Yeah, if they want to be a serious contender, they're going to have to rely on him as a closer, and some of those other bullpen additions have come through for them.
Yeah, because, I mean, they're going to hit. I mean, you look at their lineup, and they're going to hit. That's not an issue at all. It's just, you know, like it was very similar to Cincinnati, you know, the last couple of years. Can't beat everybody 10-9. So.
Well, someone once told me it's pitching and defense win games, although I guess the maybe management doesn't think that way anymore. They think offense, but if you have a great starting pitching staff and a great closer, and a good defensive team, you can do without having a great offense and still win a lot of ball games.
Yeah, well, you know, the tough part now is, you know, you have great starting pitching. If the guy gives you five innings, I don't consider that great starting pitching. But apparently that's what great starting pitching is now, because they've screwed the game up so much.
A little bit different. When Koufax and Drysdale pitched for the Dodgers, Dodgers did not have a great offensive team, but they were a huge winner because of their pitching.
So, but yeah, the game's gotten stupider over the years with sabermetrics involved and everything, and saying that, a pitcher can't go through the lineup three times, which is just ridiculous, but everybody buys into it.
Yeah. Now, have they been talking about possibly eliminating the shift for next season?
It was talked about, ways to do it, but they didn't put it in. Now, remember, baseball does have, with the negotiations this year, they do have ways where Major League Baseball can add rules. So we'll have to see if that's something that comes up. But I don't think they'll end up actually doing anything this year.
And we've talked about this before. It seems like so easy to defeat the shift if you're a smart hitter.
Yeah. You made it to the major leagues. You're the best at what you do. And you can't hit against the shift? Why?
Very simple. You're still going for the long ball.
Yeah. I just don't understand it. And, the players are like, well, they pay home run hitters. You don't think they would pay a guy who hit 350?
I think they would, myself.
Or God, even more, if you continued to hit against the shift. If a guy hit, 370, 380, you don't think he's going to get his money if he did that over 600 at-bats? I think that would be pretty impressive. He only hit 25 home runs instead of 35 or 40. But he hit 380.
And if he did this on a consistent basis, that would eliminate the shift. They would just have to start playing him normally.
They tried the shift against Ted Williams. I believe he hit 400 one year.
He did.
Obviously they didn't try it against guys like Tony Gwynn or Rod Carew because they would have just defeated it.
They would have no problems defeating it.
Tony Gwynn made a career out of hitting ground balls in between the shortstop and the third baseman. He's in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, it's a strange mindset now for today's baseball players.
Yeah. And nobody's there to tell them right from wrong. It's like, explain to them how to hit behind the runner. You have hitting coaches. If there's eight guys on the right side of the field, maybe you should try hitting it to the left.
Yeah. I did see Rizzo hit a couple of balls to the left side for hits against the shift.
Yeah, bunt. Remember he had that bunt double. I think that was last year. That was kind of humorous.
But guys
just don't do that enough.
No, and they should.
How embarrassing would it be to go 5-for-5 in a game with 5 singles the opposite way? Would that really be that bad?
Well, not to a baseball purist, but maybe to the average fan wouldn't like it. It wasn't a home run.
Yeah. Yeah, how come you didn't hit a home run? So, you hit 5 singles to left field. How come? Well, that's the way they were playing me. So who was it, Yogi Berra, who said hit them where they ain't?
Yeah, well, that was actually Willie Keeler who said that.
Yeah.
Maybe Yogi said it, too. I don't know.
He put up some big numbers,
Yeah, heck of a hitter.
It's just kind of like, really, they just, for whatever reason, refused to do it. And I did hear, the only player I've ever heard come out and say he refused to do it was Brian McCann. As he was wrapping up his career with, I think he was with the Yankees at the time, somebody asked him about it, and he just said he flat out refused to do it.
Maybe they think that it would adversely impact their swing by doing that.
I guess it's possible, but it really shouldn't. You know.
No. As you pointed out, I mean, how many major league baseball players are there really? When you think about it, there's 30 teams and what, 700-800 players that are good enough to play in the majors. You think they're good enough to defeat the shift?
Yeah, you would think, right? I mean, but instead they would rather strike out 200 times than, you know, try to hit the ball the other way, which just seems incredibly stupid.
It does.
With Major League Baseball, they want it more exciting for the fans. What's more exciting, seeing a guy get a base hit or seeing him strike out?
And what's, from a baseball purist point of view, what's more exciting and baseball-wise great to see than a player hitting behind the runner into right field and driving a runner from first to third?
Right.
And that's really that's baseball. That's the art of baseball.
Yeah, for whatever reason, that's a bad thing now. I mean, looking at it here, the highest average in all of baseball last year out of qualifiers, of course, was Trey Turner, who hit .328. In the American League, it was .319. That's what won the batting title. Now, I know they say batting average doesn't mean anything anymore. You know, that thanks another wonderful whimsical statement by Brian Kenny there, who's obviously clearly the biggest idiot on television when it comes to baseball. But, I mean, these numbers, you wouldn't even be in the top 10 just a few years back with numbers like that.
Wasn't there a couple of situations that took place a few years ago, not many years ago, when the top hitter in the league was under 300, maybe 297, 298?
I don't think, you know, maybe for some point in time, but I don't think they ever finished under 300. So.
Yeah, maybe 301, 302, maybe they finally wound up. But,
yeah, I think there was 1 year. There was like 30, yeah, there was a very low one. Let me see. I'll grab Dan's favorite search engine here, Bing, because he gets points for using it. And I'll see if I can find a list or something of, who did what as they go along here. Here we go. Yearly leaders. Hopefully this will give me what I need here. No, it looks like they were all pretty good here for quite a while. I do have a .319 back in 2014, but that's the same as, you know, last year. So, yeah, no, nothing that low. .319 is the lowest. Here's a .316. 1966, that was actually Frank Robinson. I did find a .301 with Carl Yastrzemski in 68. But that looks like the lowest one.
Yeah.
Maybe you remember that one. I was 3 years old, but I think you might remember it.
I was five.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, 301, that's right. Now that I think about it, that's probably the lowest recorded high batting average for a league in history.
You know, and just so you know, Benny Koff won the batting title in the Federal League both years they had it, in 1914 and 1915. He hit .370 and .342. So, in case you were wondering, or anybody else out there was wondering. So,
the Federal League, huh? I remember it well.
Yeah. The Federal League, they had the American Association, which I don't remember much about. The Players League lasted 1 year, and so did the Union Association. So,
yeah, I guess the National League and American League were kind of, would you say, they stabilized baseball in the 20s, was it, finally?
Yeah, well, it didn't come along until 1901 was the first year they had the American League. So.
But I'm talking about just the National and American League only.
Yeah, that was 1901 was the from 1901 to 1914, and then the Federal League popped up for a couple of years, and then it was just back to the two leagues after that. So.
Well, certainly baseball has expanded over the years, and I'm not sure if it's in a good way. Of course, when I first started, as I pointed out to you, when I first started watching baseball, it was a 154-game schedule, and there were 8 teams in each league. And now we have, what, 30?
I know when I started, there were the two divisions, East and West, but I don't remember how many teams were in it. You know, you had the National League East and the National League West. But, yeah, I don't remember. I want to say were there 10 teams in each, 12 teams in each? I just don't remember for the life of me. So.
I think in 1969 may have been the last year when there was just the National League and the American League. There may have been 10 teams in each league, and that was it. Then they started the divisions the following year, if memory serves right.
So, yeah, I can, you know, my memory goes to beans when that kind of stuff happens. I can't remember what's what anymore. So, but, yeah, it's changed quite a bit and not always for the good.
Yeah, I thought you were going to talk about the fact that the Bears have a new quarterback, but I guess we don't have time to do that.
No, they got what? They bring it in. Trevor Siemian is the backup for a couple of years, and do they still have Nick Foles? Is he still hanging around on the roster?
I think so, but isn't the new quarterback they brought in a former Northwestern student, played at Northwestern? And,
he is. Yeah.
He was on a Super Bowl winner too, I think, wasn't he, at one time?
Yeah. That I don't know for sure. I know last year he spent he actually started a few games for the Saints.
That's right.
I know he was Denver for a little while as well, but I don't know if he was on an actual, I can see if I can check here while we have time, if he was on a Super Bowl winner. Yes, he was. He was on the, will it tell me here if I click this?
Yeah, I thought he was on a winner, but of course he wasn't a starting quarterback.
He must have been with Denver when they won the Super Bowl with Peyton Manning.
Yeah,
because he was in Denver. He spent a year with the Jets and then last year with New Orleans. So.
Well, maybe he'll take over from Justin Fields.
Man, I don't know about that, but, you know, we'll see. You know, maybe Fields gets hurt, but I wouldn't expect him to beat him out or anything like that.
Well, we got a new coach, so, you know, there's going to be a honeymoon period for at least one season.
Yeah, at least. But, all right, well, let's go start our weekend so we can watch St. Peter's and Purdue. All right, the music was good. That's what I was going to take off. Look for the new one popping up there tomorrow. While you're there, if you click the link to take you over to the Sports Farm Radio Facebook, so you're going to have to get that link if you went all the way over. Don't forget to Twitter feed is at Sports Time Radio, and you can find me on Twitter at Sports Time. Q-R-T-E-C-I-M-E is how you see that there. And if you came by and listened live, thank you for doing that. But if you missed out, you can listen any time you want by going to TuneIn.com. All right, everybody, have a good weekend. Take care.